Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined from a safe distance by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
Over in the bullpen, we have got Chris Zook.
At least 6 feet apart.
Yeah, even further, right? And joining us tonight, our special guest from Sawyer and Boys Club, Zach Houston. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Hey, happy to be here.
So as part of our ongoing series of baseball movie rewatches, we decided to do 42, the 2013 Brian Helgeland, Jackie Robinson pick, and chose this one in part, obviously, with what's going on everywhere, I mean, globally at this point, but also invited you on, Zach, because you're a Dodger fan. And so we like to start kind of with our guests as to kind of how they landed on the team that they cheer for. So maybe you can tell us, like, does Jackie Robinson have any bearing on why you became a Dodger fan, or what led you to the...
Jackie Robinson may have had some bearing a long time ago. So essentially my grandpa was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan as a young lad and grown into a young man. He was 19, I believe, when they relocated to Los Angeles, and he stayed on board. And my old man was obsessed with Vin Scully. So Vin Scully's voice was always raging in the house for my youth. And then eventually they were both into it, and it came down to me. And I do have some Blue Jays allegiances just cause they were always on, but, Hart's probably always down south with the Dodgers.
So obviously, like, three generations of Dodger fandom then. Like, was it the kind of thing like your grandfather would like tell stories about particular games or about players or things like that?
Yes, he's Sandy Koufax for sure.
Yeah.
He was obsessed with Sandy Koufax and Drysdale as well. And those were the two big guys for him. My dad didn't really have too many old tales. I mean, the Kirk Gibson,
Gibby,
Homer obviously was huge, but I definitely like looking at the history of the club of the three generations. I've been shafted the most because,
well, you can thank the Astros for that.
No win since I've been born. Say it again.
You can thank the Astros for that.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get it.
Your grandfather tells you about Sandy Koufax. Your dad talks about Gibson. You're gonna tell your kids about
trash cans,
trash cans, and Alex Cora.
It'll probably be the wild horse, to be honest. That was once Puig came into the picture. That was when
I love Puig. Puig is one of my ride or dies. That guy is incredible.
He's just so entertaining. There was never a dull game with him, whether it was
always electric,
frustrating.
He tried to fight an entire team twice.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah, it took everyone to hold him back. And and the bat flips and licking the pine tar and just trying to skip the cutoff whenever he could.
He's such a fun ball player to watch. I cannot believe he's not signed to a team yet. Like, it's unreal to me.
Yeah, I really didn't love Don Mattingly's approach to guys like him. I think he kind of gave him a bad name. Like, their unnecessary battles have carried with Puig farther than they should.
Well, Mattingly's stuck in Marlins land now, so it doesn't matter.
He's definitely Mattingly is definitely one of those play the game the right way kind of jerks that
we
dislike on this show.
Yeah. I was gonna say that does tie in nicely.
Yes, it does.
To the film that we're going to talk about. Because, of course, the baseball, the way it's been played, the right way, yada, yada. That kind of thinking was what prevented us from having black players in baseball until Jackie Robinson integrated things. So I guess maybe if since you're our guest, Zach, we'll let you start. Was there anything you picked up on, anything you wanted to talk about first in watching this movie?
Yeah, so I actually was slow to get around to it. I watched it in anticipation of this show today, just yesterday. I mean, I was really excited for it when it came out, but I just had a period where I didn't really watch a lot of movies, so it slipped past me. But I think watching it now, especially with the social climate in the world right now, I love the story. I mean, how can you not? It's unbelievably inspiring. But I mean, as with so much of Hollywood, a little they can't completely steer away from the whole white savior angle. And I mean, I think it's pretty poignant how, despite Mr. Ricky coming around on seemingly on a personal level as the story went on, the initial motivation really being financial is just not really surprising. And to be frank, I'd love if it got another treatment where it focused on his story almost exclusively.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, it is almost entirely, if you read the history books, right, it's almost got nothing to do with Branch Rickey and his belief that his belief one way or the other about whether or not he did enough for a black player on his university baseball team. It's almost entirely through interviews and personal accounts that he thought he could make more money and win more titles having African-American players on his team, as far as Ricky was concerned. So yeah, I mean, Jackie Robinson himself is an incredible story. There's so much about him and a lot of those other Negro League players that have just these amazing stories of perseverance that, you're right, there should have been more focus on him, his interpersonal relationship with his wife and how he interacted with the world around him, being the first black baseball player in the major leagues.
Can I say something here? Because I this is the first time I saw it as well. I kind of missed it in the theaters back in the day. And one thing I read about this is that the story to get to the big screen took about 20 some years. It went through 3 or 4 directors. Spike Lee was associated with this. And so I guess finally they kind of greenlighted it, I guess, for Hollywood. And it definitely has that Hollywood shine to it, right? And it's a bit unfortunate when you read the story, like the real story a bit, that Branch Rickey is played up a lot more in this in the story, where, I mean, they only do 1 year of Jackie Robinson, right? Like, I thought it was interesting because that's the whole story is basically that. For me, I was a little saddened that they kind of gloss over the Montreal aspect as being an Expo fan. Like, that year in the Royals was actually kind of important, because that sort of led the way to him getting to the major leagues. But I think I mean, obviously the story is amazing. It just definitely has that Hollywood shine to it.
Well, speaking of Hollywood, one of the things I picked up on, I wondered if in order to get the movie made, they needed a star.
Yeah, Harrison Ford.
And so, you know, I mean, they needed to make the Branch Rickey part big enough for Harrison Ford to be the name on the marquee. Chadwick Boseman, I mean, this is pre-Black Panther.
That's right. He's not who he is now, right?
Which is crazy because, like, he's a megastar now, right?
Yeah.
Like an absolute megastar. But there are other pretty big actors in this. Even if you discount Harrison Ford and Chadwick Boseman, right? Like, Lucas Black is in it. Alan Tudyk is in it. Andre Holland is in it. Like, there are some... Chris Maloney, like there are some, well, Chris Maloney's in it for such a unremarkable amount of time, right?
But he's got one hot scene and then he throws some heat.
But yeah, there's a lot of like big name actors in this that you know, I don't necessarily know that you needed. I mean, don't get me wrong, Harrison Ford does a really good job as Branch Rickey, but I don't necessarily know that it was needed.
It would be much more of an ensemble pick based on those actors though, right? Like, I mean, you're not getting Han Solo.
That's fair.
In any role or whatever. And whether that helped kind of get it made. I mean, this is a very Hollywood version of it. And I actually kind of like the fact that they only took like essentially one year in the whole story of Jackie Robinson, that first major league year.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's when he broke the color barrier, right? And you know, like, they do show you him playing his first game in a Royals jersey in Jersey City.
Yep.
Because technically that was the first kind of professional integrated ball before the majors.
Right.
And then they jump ahead, and then it's like, you know, that season and, you know, some of his teammates kind of finally coming around and like waking up to him as a teammate.
Yeah, I think you can focus more on the game-to-game struggle when you bring it down to a snapshot like that instead of the classic sports or especially baseball movie video montage with four or five hits and some nice pop flies where 80 games have gone by and 60 seconds of screen time. So I think you could really, it allowed them, I guess, to focus on his, like, on single play struggles with the battles with the pitcher, bringing chin music the whole time and things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, it does have some very impactful scenes along the way too. You know, the scene where they don't let the team where the team is not allowed to go into the hotel at all. The scene
that
where they're trying
silly,
to,
silly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The well, scene where
no surprises what we're seeing in Philly right now.
Yeah, the scene where Wendell Smith is smuggling Jackie out down to Daytona. You know, the entire scene, the entire set of scenes with Ben Chapman. You know, it's very pointed, and I think it does a good job. It delivers the anxiety.
There's a definitely an impact, right? I mean, because the language used in the movie is based on what it was back in the late 40s, right? And it's a bit jarring, but that's what he was going through, right? That's part of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that, Alan Tudyk has who I'm actually a really big fan of, mostly because I'm such a huge Firefly fan. Yeah. I mean, he's also in, he's in some other stuff too that I really enjoy, but yeah, mostly Firefly. And, I mean, he's been very open about how uncomfortable he was and how, you know, he kept apologizing to everybody on, like, every time they were going to film, he would like apologize ahead of time and be like, "Hey, listen, I'm really sorry." And like after this, they were done filming, he would go and like throw up violently. That's how awful it made him feel. And he said that, you know, he tried really hard to develop like some sort of friendship with Chadwick Boseman despite that. And Boseman wanted nothing to do with him, which is interesting.
It is like jarring is the perfect word for it. Like just the hair standing up on the back of my neck while I was watching it, just like so uncomfortable.
Because they didn't sugarcoat it, right? Like it's there right away, right? I mean, the interesting thing also is because I felt a bit is that there's some really good moments. The one I think with Pee Wee Reese.
Yeah, I think maybe we're all for it. maybe we'll all wear 42 one day. That way they can't tell us apart.
And they're hugging and the fans and the vitriol that's out there. And it kind of really brings it. There was also one line here I wrote down. I thought it was kind of interesting. I think it's also about, I don't know which player, Brian, you might remember. There was a player who wanted to be traded, comes back into Branch Rickey's office and says,
Dixie Walker.
Yeah. And he goes, the world is changing and I guess I could live with the change.
He ended up getting traded the next year.
The next year, right? But I just thought it was, these movies, they sort of have these moments sometimes where they kind of sum it up in a nice scene, right? But sort of he kind of reconsiders after Jackie kind of wins over sort of the team a bit. And,
well, I mean, that's a little bit fancified because Dixie Walker still was an unabashed racist even after the trade.
Sure. I mean, the scene, I know the scene where Jackie kind of destroys the bat in the hallway there is sort of what I read. It wasn't a real, it didn't really happen. And sort of, it was an amalgamation of sort of what the director thought Jackie would kind of gone through somewhat during that first season. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's a shame that Jackie didn't live longer.
It's crazy that he died so young, right? He was only 53 when he passed away.
Yeah, heart problems. It's really a shame.
The Tudyk scene, I think my takeaway from it was just the fact that the umps let that go. Like it kind of spoke like quietly to like the like structural indifference, right? Because it's as soon as his teammate runs across and starts jawing at the Philly manager, that then the ump intercedes and says like, you need to get back in your dugout. But up until that point, you know, he's been out jawing at Robinson, like the entire, like three at bats. And he's like way out of the dugout and doing this. And the ump's just like completely let it go. And no one says anything. And it's like ultimately one of his teammates reaches a breaking point, but that's not prevented by like sort of like it was about like structural indifference and kind of how the system like had no problem or like really didn't want to change.
It's crazy how we're still 60 years, like we're 60 years later and we still have problems like this constantly. It's like, you know, you figure that in 60 years people would have become better human beings, but apparently not.
Right. Cause you think this is like sort of, oh, well, that was back in the day. Right. But that is now, right. That's literally happening as we go on. I thought there's another really good scene here where the Brooklyn bus is pulling up to the Philadelphia hotel. Right. And then they get out and they're arguing with the manager trying to get in. And then I guess that's with Dixie, right? That Jackie gets into it.
Yeah.
And then he says, I thought the one thing is I felt there should have been some more better lines for Jackie, but I thought I wrote this down about he just yells at him, say to Dixon, he says, I'm not going anywhere, right? And kind of that defiant but yet in control sort of Jackie Robinson, right? That he was part of the team but he wasn't going to back down from anyone as well. So I thought that was a good scene.
The pressure on him to be like better than everyone else and not just like an average ball player, like the fact that like he has to put up with all of this BS, certainly struck me as very relevant in today's age, right? That like, you know, if I got pulled over by the cops, I can be a little irate about, you know, getting a speeding ticket. But, you know, as every black parent who's talked about it recently says, like they have to coach their children about, you know, if you're stopped by the police, you have to be like as civil as possible, as cooperative as possible. And even then,
your hands still on the steering wheel, like, and that's insane.
Like, right. Like this, you can't just be a person. You have to be like super or like the best at the thing just to like make it. And just how unfortunate that kind of like level of expectation is. You did say, Zook, that he didn't get a lot of great lines. The one thing I think, the line that I marked down that I liked was he said, I don't think it matters what I believe, only what I do, right? That he was judged on his actions and not necessarily on his thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to get personality right when the stories are so historical. So the way he played it so stoically, and that he kind of was focused and determined the whole time. I can't say, and nothing I've read about it does anything to dispel that, but I would have loved to unpack a little more his relationship almost separately between his role as essentially as a civil rights icon and his relationship with straight up baseball. And really, I would have loved if they would have explored more, like if he was able to differentiate those two, or if it was a singular focus for him throughout his career.
You know what? That's a great point, because one thing I was thinking about, because the one big thing that we've kind of gone through in this pandemic, you know, The Last Dance was such a crazy cultural revolution, sort of everyone was watching it, and it kind of brought back. I mean, I think they could do a Jackie Robinson documentary. I mean, there's stuff that you're saying that they can unpack, that there's so many different directions. I looked up something on Wikipedia and I couldn't believe this, but they said in 1947, so his rookie year, he was the second most popular celebrity in America outside of Bing Crosby. So there's that scene at the end of, I think, the movie where he's signing autographs to not just black children, but to white children, right? And, you know, it's multi, like he's crossed the boundary by the end of the movie, right? But I didn't know that at all. But that's just like, so Jackie Robinson, you know, he became very popular by the end of it, one of the Rookie of the Year. But I just think it's so hard in like a 2-hour movie to unpack like the whole story, right? So I think that's why they focus on the 1 year. I would agree with Michael. It was amazing that he, that they just sort of, what he went through that first year, you know, they just showed so many different variations of what he had to go through to survive and to persevere throughout it. But I just thought it was amazing, but somehow he won over the public. I didn't know that.
He's such an incredible ball player too. Like, you want to talk about peaks. Yeah. You want to talk about, you know, he had such an unfortunately short career. I mean, he basically only played,
but wouldn't those almost be 10 peak years?
He played, well, not full 10, but he played 10 years in total, and six of them he was like MVP level player. In six of them he was an MVP level player, and in three of them he was at least an all-star level player. He only had one season where he was like league average. It was 1955. After that, he still came back in 56 and put up another all-star season. Like, if he had a longer career, he still got in the Hall of Fame anyways, but if he even had like a 3-year longer career, we might be talking about him as maybe the best second baseman ever.
Zach, that's, you mentioned
how incredible he was. Sorry.
You know, the separating kind of his celebrity from his baseball, and like, you know, that those two, that was one of the things I picked up on, was when Pee-wee Branch goes to visit Branch Rickey. Pee-wee goes to Branch Rickey's office and he says, "I just want to play ball." Branch kind of talks to that like inextricable sort of like his race tied to his ball play. He says, "I bet Jackie wishes that too. I wishes he wasn't leading the league and hit by pitch. The world's not that simple anymore, and I guess it never was." Right? That the, like, his identity is unfortunately inextricably linked from his ball play. And as much as we'd like to kind of just look at his stats or look at him as a ball player, but I mean, we still see it. You were talking about Yasiel Puig and being, you know, one of your favorite players, and that's a guy who got a reputation as being a bit of a hothead, or, you know, a showboat when it came to his play and stuff like that. And very often the people who were talking about that, it was tied to his race or, you know, his ethnicity.
For sure. And that was something that frustrated me so much. I mean, yeah, right around when he was breaking on the scene, Bryce Harper was breaking on the scene on the scene at the same time. And some of his antics at the time were certainly flew in the face of playing the game the right way, as we say,
totally
far worse than the Wild Horse. But the criticisms levied at the two players were so different, and a lot of Puigs to me seemed racially based and racially rooted. And I mean, it was certainly frustrating as a fan of his, and I mean, I guess as a human being.
Absolutely. Well,
hey, I had one point about the reporter
Wendell Smith.
Wendell Smith, right? So mm-hmm. I didn't know that story either. I didn't know that he was such an integral part of sort of the Jackie Robinson story. I thought that was interesting. And in some respects, reading a little bit afterwards, I think maybe they kind of downplayed it a bit in the movie, right? Is that the way I read it is that he was just as instrumental as Branch Rickey of kind of getting Jackie Robinson being the first player picked by the Brooklyn Dodgers, right? Because there's that list of four or five African-American players they're looking at.
Campy's too sweet. Satch is too old when they start kind of right. going through. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. And Gibson, he's in the middle there. They're looking for someone for longevity, but I just thought, yeah, his storyline was great. And I just thought that line about him, when he picks them up in New York there and they're not talking and he says, well, do you know why I have a typewriter in the stands, right? Because I cannot be in the press box with the white writers, right? I mean, I just thought that was, a very nice little moment.
Well, and Smith, he broke the color barrier for the Baseball Writers Association of America the next year in 48.
Yeah, which they show at the end of the movie there, which was nice. I don't know if you guys, I thought that was a nice little homage there at the end, where they played the old Jackie Robinson song by Count Basie yes. in the credits, which is, I tell you, right off the bat there, I said to Lee J, that's a Jackie Robinson song, right? It's very, you can't mistake that song there. I thought that was really nice there, a nice little touch.
One touch. I just want to give a shout out. I couldn't tell which teammate was having it, but there was someone having a shower beer in the scene.
Yeah.
And he finally goes and joins his teammates. And I was like, nice.
It's unfortunately either a Bud or a Standard, which is, not, it's less than optimal, but shower beers are fantastic. There's nothing like finishing a game, coming home and having a good cold shower beer.
Yeah, I appreciated that one. Any other notes or comments, guys? I know we're kind of running out of time here, so.
Spider Jorgensen's a great name.
Incredible baseball name.
Yeah, that really.
Pee-wee Reese alone, that's a great one too, right? Those are just nice. Those are just great. They had great little names, their nicknames and stuff of guys back in the day, that's for sure. I keep saying they need more nicknames in modern day baseball.
We have quite a few of them, right? They just
but you don't hear about them as much. That's all.
I just don't think we integrate them in the same way. I think that there's still a lot of nicknames. I just don't think we like Spider Jorgensen. Like that dude's, they just call him Spider.
Yeah, I got what you're saying. Yeah,
that's it, right? But well, like
Mike Trout's nickname. I don't even know.
I don't right? think he. You know what I'm I don't saying? Think he like, has one, but like Mad Max is
future
one.
Hall of Famer Mike Trout.
Right. Well, maybe all time best ball player. We don't have a nickname for him. Wow. We might want to change that. We might have 2 years to come up with that. The way the major leagues are going, but that's another
pretty.
Story.
He is pretty milquetoast, but I don't know. We've got guys like we had guys like Coco Crisp.
Coco Crisp, of course. Yeah.
Right. You know whose first name I just found out like 3 days ago wasn't actually Coco but Covelli.
No, Coco's better. I like that.
Coco's much better.
Bossman Jr. Upton, BJ Upton.
Yeah. Spire Jorgensen's triple slash line over his 6-year MLB career, 266, 359, 384, totaled 3 wins above replacement.
There you go. You spent a little bit of time on Baseball Reference.
Serviceable.
Also,
string bean stats on Baseball Reference?
No, I didn't. I forgot to go look it up. I can go check that out once we're done. I'll check that out. David Ackerman. But yeah, one other interesting thing. Despite mentioning that he won or had the most hit by pitch is that year, he only ever led the league in hit by pitches once, and that was in 1948. Only got hit by 72 hit by pitches over the course of his entire career. To put that in perspective, Anthony Rizzo has had the same length of career as right now as Jackie Robinson's entire career was, and he has been hit by pitch 142 times. So it just wasn't part of the game back then as much.
Two final notes from me. So they show the Royals opener in Jersey City, and he hits a home run, but that was actually his second at bat. The way they make it look in the film, it seems like it's his first at bat. His first one was a full count ground out. I looked up the box score from that game just to see.
I was wondering that.
Done, you know, first pitch, first swing homer. Yeah. Seems a little too good to be true, and it was. The Branch Rickey quote at the end kind of struck me because, you know, in terms of what's going on in the world right now, he said, "There was something unfair at the heart of the game I loved and I ignored it. And you let me love baseball again." And hopefully folks are done ignoring things and are able to love again. I should add that this movie is free right now if you go to Cineplex.com.
It's worth it.
Online. They are offering up a list of films. They're offering up a list of black made or black focused films. And free of charge to rent, and well worth that and worth more. Like I said, I own a copy of this on Blu-ray, so I certainly had put my money where my mouth was beforehand. But Zach, thanks for joining us here on the Bench Jockeys and talking about 42.
It was a real pleasure, and nice to not punish Brian's listeners with just EPL talk this time.
Right on. That's it for here on the Bench Jockeys. Stick around for Front Burner, and we'll be back next week. I believe we're gonna we're gonna do the original Bad News Bears. I think.
Ooh, that's a good one.
We should spend at least some time next week talking about the MLBPA stuff too.
Oh, that's depressing.
Well, you know what? We're having Jared on to talk Bad News Bears, and we've already had him on to talk about his shameful love of Cleveland baseball. So we can spend that time talking about MLBPA.
Strike three, you're out.